Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
Good afternoon and welcome to today's episode of Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. Today we will be joined by Dr. Matthew Bunsen, a friend and the Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News, Senior Fellow at St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology, and we'll be talking about some of the great news events that are taking place across the world. We will address some of the issues that we're facing even here locally, but we're going to be talking about Pope Francis's letter to parish priests about how they ought to cultivate a sense of fraternity and about how Pope Francis is greatly concerned about the plummeting birth rates of many countries, in particular Europe and Italy, for that matter. So we'll address some of those issues and the ramifications that follow. We also want to talk about a misrepresentation of Pope Francis's presentation of Dignitas Infinita and how that addresses gender ideology and what gender ideology does to the human person in society. And we're going to open the conversation with a major news issue that's facing social media right now. It's going, as one would call, viral. A Chicago priest blessed same-sex spouses in Chicago, in the Catholic DePaul University. It's causing some issue. It's definitely causing scandal, and it's being addressed right now. So we'll be talking about all of that. Today, the feast of St. Philip and St. James. We also want to praise the Lord for the gift of these holy apostles. And we want to contemplate, for example, Tertullian and his writing on the prescription against heretics, and in particular the preaching of the apostles. See, our Lord Jesus Christ himself declared that his gospel was to be carried forward by the work of the apostles to the ends of the earth. And so during his earthly life, whether publicly to the crowds or even privately to his apostles, he picked special companions and told them, go forth. He sent them forth with the euangelion, the gift of the gospel. And the gospel is essentially that mankind has been bound by the chains of sin, and God sent his only Son to take on the sins of mankind and to crucify us with him on the cross, that through his vicarious work of atonement, we can now enjoy the path to eternal salvation. So salvation has been opened to us, and we thank God for the gift of Jesus Christ and the work of his apostles. Let's ponder that as we take a look at the headlines.
Thanks, Marcus. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Friday, May 3rd. It's the Feast of Saints Philip and James. Today's news brought to you by Ave Maria University. Your vocation location is at avemaria.edu. Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs has signed a repeal of the state's near-total ban on abortion. Two Republicans joined with all Democrats in the state Senate in voting to repeal the 1864 law that was upheld by the Arizona Supreme Court last month. The bill would have banned all abortions except to protect the life of the mother. A previous law banning abortions after 15 weeks now goes into effect. There's no place on university campuses for anti-Semitism, according to White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre, who spoke with reporters.
Jean-Pierre added that breaking into buildings and destroying property is not a peaceful protest. Her comments today come after President Biden on Thursday decided to speak out against the unrest on campuses after days of silence. He defended the right to dissent, but made clear he believed too many of the demonstrations had gone beyond the bounds of free speech. I'm Lisa Taylor.
A Pennsylvania nurse is getting life in prison for killing 17 patients with excessive doses of insulin. Heather Presti pleaded guilty and sentenced after being accused of administering high doses of insulin to patients at rehabilitation centers in Pennsylvania between 2020 and 2023. The IRS is planning to increase audits on large corporations and wealthy individuals. The agency has nearly $80 billion in new funding from the 2022 Inflation Reduction Act. Some of that money will be used to crank up the number of audits on corporations with assets of more than $250 million, as well as people with incomes of more than $10 million. And Wall Street is closing sharply higher to cap a winning streak. Stocks soared with major indices gaining more than 1% after April's weaker-than-expected job growth and wage gains. From your AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Steve Clark.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. A priest in Chicago last month blessed a same-sex couple, saying that the Vatican's recent document, Fiducia Supplicans, authorized such blessings. We talk about this issue and more in the next hour with Matthew Bunsen. Dr. Matthew Bunsen is Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News and a Senior Fellow at St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology. Author or co-author of more than 50 books, including the first English-language biography of Pope Francis and the Encyclopedia of Catholic History. You can follow him on Twitter at Matt Bunsen, and he hosts Register Radio, which airs Saturdays at 4 p.m. and Sundays at 11 a.m. on Ave Maria Radio. Matthew, how are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you? It's always good to talk with you.
Likewise. And thank you for joining us today. So,
always.
I'm just going to open up the floor here because this video right now is making the rounds on social media. So it's crucial that we engage this. This priest in Chicago authorized this blessing. He blessed the same-sex couple at St. Vincent de Paul Parish, which is affiliated with the Catholic DePaul University. So talk to us about what's going on here.
Yeah, well, first, by way of some context, if we all remember when Fiducia Supplicans first came out all the way back now on December 18th, I think, of last year, there was a flurry of activity on the part of those who were trying to demonstrate how these new blessings might work or in some cases not work, or at least not the way they're supposed to work. And there was a lot of controversy surrounding one particular video of a priest, I think, in Lexington, who did a blessing of a same-sex couple that was clearly not in the spirit or the letter of Fiducia Supplicans.
Mm-hmm.
That's important because that was a moment that really galvanized many of the African bishops in their stern response to Fiducia. Now, months later, having had additional clarifications from the Dicastery of the Doctrine of the Faith, from its prefect, Cardinal Victor Manuel Fernandez, and now, of course, Dignitas Infinita, we could have predicted this. We're starting to see more attempted applications, or again, not applications of Fiducia Supplicans.
Right.
That's important because in this case, what we're seeing, and this is, you're absolutely right, this has gone viral across social media. It was part of a shared Instagram post back in, I think, on April 22nd. And it involves, as you noted, the apparent blessing of a same-sex couple by a priest, Father Joseph Williams, who's pastor of the St. Vincent de Paul Parish near downtown Chicago. And it's notable in this, in his comments, for example, to OSV News, and the Catholic News Agency is reporting this, that he's standing behind, quote, his understanding of Fiducia Supplicans, that same-sex couples can be blessed as long as it does not reflect a marriage situation and as long as it's clear it's not a marriage. Well, anyone who's seen the video, I think, could come away with a perhaps different perspective on that.
So one of the people involved in the blessing, her name is Kelly, Kelly Knight, she actually posted that her partner had always wanted to, quote-unquote, get married at that very chapel, the chapel of DePaul University. And so this was a surprise, and it was explicitly, first of all, it violates Fiducia Supplicans on a lot of levels. It's planned. It was completely orchestrated. It was planned as a surprise. And it is an explicit blessing of a marriage, and there's nothing spontaneous about this. So just comment on the fact that, again, as you mentioned, this is a non-application of Fiducia, or the spirit of Fiducia Supplicans, I should say.
Yeah, in fairness, we want to say it's the apparent non-application in the sense that I think the pastor is arguing and at some point even says in the video, well, you know, this is a simple blessing. But as we have seen, this is prearranged, so there wasn't anything spontaneous about it. And it certainly wanders far afield from the sample blessing, for example, that Cardinal Fernandez offered in his explanatory note that came out after Fiducia Supplicans, about 2 weeks after. So we're seeing here, I think, a what would appear, at least in the video, to be a simulation of a marriage. And what is also interesting about this is that Kelly Knight, as you noted, who shared this on Instagram, is herself a Methodist minister.
That's right.
So that the timing of this comes just before the United Methodist Church voted to lift its own bans on LGBTQ clergy and same-sex weddings. So one can ask the immediate question, why wasn't it sufficient or satisfactory enough to simply do a wedding, a same-sex wedding, within the Methodist confines, because certainly that's now permitted, divisive and shattering as that's likely to be to whatever is left of Methodist unity. Why did it have to be here?
Right.
And as she says, her partner wanted always to have this happen there. But again, the optics of this, it would appear to be something that is, A, going far beyond, again, that spirit and letter of Fiducia Supplicans, but it's also an apparent simulation. And when you read the transcripts, for example, or when you watch the video, the phrases that are used is very clear, at least from the standpoint of watching the video, that this is far from a non-liturgical blessing.
That's right. It really is a pseudo-liturgy, because there are, if I'm being extremely generous, paraliturgical overtones to this. We have some of the words here. Loving God, increase and consecrate the love that such and such share for one another. The rings that they have exchanged are a sign of their fidelity and commitment. So you've got all of these overtones of what is seemingly a marriage without actually having a marriage. And what's being blessed here is the pseudo-marriage, not the person. This isn't an appeal for, as the Latin spirit of Fiducia Supplicans calls for, an appeal for God's grace to elevate them to the order of living in accordance with God's law. This is a validation of the life that they have chosen to live.
Well, that's right. And you can also hear very clearly in the video where the priest asks them, says their names, and then, do you freely recommit yourselves to love each other as holy spouses?
That's right.
And to live in peace and harmony together forever? And they respond, I do. So that certainly is neither simple nor spontaneous.
Right, right.
And we can note, too, that I believe that when you watch this, it's clear that his vestments would add to the solemnity, the location within the church. All of these things would point to, unmistakably, again, what at least looks like a simulation of what would be a sacramental marriage. And of course, the church is simply not powered to do that.
So just to widen the scope of the conversation, Matthew, since you brought up Dignitas Infinita, we are still trying to, as a global church, really capture Pope Francis's vision for the LGBTQ community and his take on gender ideology. Even though Dignitas Infinita, Infinita really did draw some of those hard lines. So paint that picture for us in broad strokes.
Yeah, I think what we see in the Dignitas Infinita is a restatement, is a clarification. But the one thing that we need to remember with Dignitas Infinita is that it is not exclusively looking at gender ideology.
Mm-hmm.
It is looking at the defense, basically, of human dignity. That's important because Pope Francis has spoken many times over his pontificate and long before he was even elected pope about gender ideology and the threats that it poses. Now, in Dignitas Infinita, it has very clear restatements about the concerns of the church relating to things like gender ideology and sex change operations and everything else. But again, it nests it within that sort of wider concern for a host of other issues, including surrogacy and abortion and euthanasia and assisted suicide,
right.
People with disabilities. But Dignitas Infinita, I think, does do something that is important. And that is, as I said, it restates what Pope Francis has taught, what the church teaches. But it also reaffirms, in the way that Pope Francis does, that, quote, every person, regardless of sexual orientation, ought to be respected in his or her own dignity and treated with consideration.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he's just quoting the teachings of the Church very clearly. So I've always said that when Pope Francis comes at this issue, he certainly has recourse and does cite the Catechism. But the Catechism is also very clear about the disordered acts, and then it also looks, as it says, reaffirming the dignity of everyone.
Right.
What Francis has done typically is to sort of reconfigure that and reorder it. In other words, he starts in many ways with the focus on the person and reaffirming the dignity of the person before he restates Church teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one way to look at what he tries to do with Dignitas Infinita. And I think that's consistent, too, with what he's done throughout his pontificate.
So we only have about 2 minutes left in the segment, but
yeah.
That provides the segue for conversation on the issue Pope Francis has faced lately with New Ways Ministry and the letter he wrote to mm-hmm. Sister Jeanine Gramick. So let's begin now, and then at the end of the segment, we'll take a break and continue in the second segment.
Yeah, well, we have seen Pope Francis on a number of occasions interact, write, with a number of very controversial figures. I think, for example, of his letters of support that he has sent to Father James Martin,
mm-hmm.
The Jesuit priest and author and everything else, and LGBTQ advocate, or certainly somebody who has been very involved and very vocal and very public in his so-called outreach to that community. And he has had a meeting, Pope Francis did, with another very controversial figure, and that's Sister Jeanine Gramick, who's a co-founder of New Ways Ministry. And for those who may not be familiar with that, that is a ministry that itself has been seriously questioned and denounced by the U.S. bishops, for
mm-hmm.
example. And yet Pope Francis chooses to meet with them. He did, as I said, back in October during the Synod, at a time when the Synod on Synodality was holding what we know now are fairly controversial or heated discussions within its own body over the question of LGBTQ outreach and the place of LGBTQ persons within the Church.
So
what we can make of that, and we can pick this up when we come back from the break.
So, yeah, we're going to continue this conversation with Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. We're talking right now about news pertaining to the Church of the World, especially Pope Francis's response to New Ways Ministry and Sister Jeanine Gramick, one of its co-founders. I'm Marcus Peter for Cresta in the Afternoon.
The Catholic Church teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. St. John the Apostle records the John chapter 6 Bread of Life discourse, in which Jesus states that his flesh is true food and his blood true drink. Who better to understand John's writings and subsequent teachings than a disciple and student of John, St. Ignatius of Antioch? In his letter to the Smyrnians in 110 AD, Ignatius writes, "I have no taste for corruptible food, nor for the pleasures of this life. I desire the bread of God, which is the flesh of Jesus Christ. And for drink, I desire his blood, which is love incorruptible." The Catholic Church absolutely follows St. John and St. Ignatius in taking Jesus at his word. Examining the truths of the Catholic faith, this is faithforensics.org.
Like the saints, do our loved ones who have gone before us still participate in the living tradition of prayer? The Catholic Catechism says they participate by the witness of their lives, the transmission of their writings, and their actual prayer right now. Witnesses in heaven contemplate God, praise Him, and constantly care for those they have left on earth. When saints enter into the joy of their Master, they are put in charge of many things. The Catechism asserts that the saints' intercession is their most exalted service to God's plan. Thus, We should be asking them to intercede for us and for the entire world. Sometimes personal charisms of witnesses to God's love for mankind are passed on as the spirit of Elijah was passed on to Elisha and John the Baptist in order that their followers may have a share in their spirit. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 15 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Acton University is not your typical conference. Taking place from June 24th to 27th in beautiful Grand Rapids, Michigan, each day is packed with thought-provoking presentations on the intellectual and practical foundations of a free society. Bringing together world leaders in business, academia, and the church, Acton University is a conference dedicated to connecting moral and religious principles to economic and personal liberty. More information at university.acton.org.
This program brought to you in part by the town of Ave Maria, Florida.
Ave Maria, a big kind of small town. A golf cart friendly, ride your bike everywhere kind of town with something for everyone. Resort style amenities, two golf courses, shopping, and dining in our town center. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at the core of the community and a wide range of homes to meet your family's needs. Visitors are welcome. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. Ave Maria, a big kind of small town.
And good afternoon. Welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. A Light to All Nations on the Nature and Mission of the Church by Father Brian Milady. This book, recently published, will elevate your understanding of the Church by helping you unpack what one of the central documents of the Second Vatican Council, Lumen Gentium, really taught, and understand it through the lens of traditional Church teachings, history, and philosophy. You can find it now in the EWTN Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com. My guest, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. And we are talking right now about Pope Francis's recent response in a letter to Sister Janine Gramick, one of the co-founders of New Ways Ministry. It's an organization that provides pastoral outreach to self-identified LGBTQ persons. This is a ministry and an apostolate that has been disavowed by the USCCB, and there are reasons why. So let's talk about all of that, Matt.
So just by way, again, of some background, New Ways Ministry is an organization that proclaims itself to be Catholic. It asserts or claims that it educates and advocates for justice and equality, as they put it, for LGBT Catholics back in the day, and calls for reconciliation within, as they put it, the larger church and civil communities. Now, the USCCB has stated on a couple of occasions, you can go back especially to 2010, that the organization, this group, is not an approved Catholic organization and cannot claim to speak on behalf of Catholics. It also ran into a number of difficulties back about 25 years ago with the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith that the group's two founders were supposed to be permanently prohibited from any pastoral work involving homosexual persons and are ineligible for an undetermined period for any office in their respective religious institutes. So that's the background.
Right.
Pertaining specifically also to Sister Janine Gramick and Father Robert Nugent. Now, Pope Francis himself has, as we know, over his pontificate, taken a slightly different approach of actually looking at dialogue with everyone And that's certainly his privilege. And part of that is communicating, as he has done, as we noted, with individuals like Father James Martin. And we know that, as we were talking before we went to the break, he actually welcomed Sister Jeanine Gromyk at the Vatican back in October of last year in the middle of the Synod on Synodality. What's the message that he's sending? I think the message that he's sending is that while he is very keen, as he has been, on restating, as we saw with Dignitas Infinita, the teachings of the Church, he also wants to make sure that there is a welcomeness to what we now refer to keep using the alphabet soup for this, the LGBTQ community.
Right.
And that's his privilege as Pope. Now, it comes also in the face of very significant criticism from that same community regarding Dignitas Infinita.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I think, also classic Francis that in the face of that criticism, he would do outreach to try to repair or at least to reach out to those communities that might feel offended or hurt by, frankly, the restating of Church teaching.
So just to highlight exactly one of the core issues, and this is based on exactly what you just shared, Sister Gromyk, Father Nugent, they're strong proponents of modern expressions of gender ideology, including, and I'd say in this case, especially with regard to sex change surgeries, gender mutilation surgeries. And Pope Francis and the DDF at large, actually, have declared that respect for one's own body is crucial in light of claims and advances by gender theory. We don't want, as a Catholic people, to create a world without sexual differences, because this difference is willed by God. So that seems to be the bedrock of the dialogue mm-hmm. that's taking place right now.
Yeah, and I will be blunt that I have not seen the full text of his letter. I have not seen the letter, so I can't actually mm-hmm. guarantee whatever might be in it. One thing that I did find striking, and this is something that Pope Francis has done on a number of other occasions, is highlight and recommend that the recipient of that letter read a book called Robert Hugh Benson's Lord of the World. And Francis has talked about it, as I said, on a couple of occasions. And for those who may not be familiar with it, Lord of the World, which is one of Francis's favorite books,
mm-hmm.
is a stunning dystopian vision of the future. And in it, essentially, it's a new world order that is completely secular, humanist, authoritarian, and is almost the perfect embodiment of the culture of death. And Pope Francis supposedly references this book. Now, I would encourage not just our own audience, but the recipients of this letter at New Ways of Ministry, please read The Lord of the World, because I think it says a lot about Francis's fears
right.
of certainly what he calls the movement of canceling differences.
Mm-hmm.
And when we read Dignitas Infinita, we can see very clearly Francis's concern as expressed in this document from the Catch of the Doctrine of the Faith, the canceling out of those differences, but also the impact of, to go back to Pope Benedict XVI, of relativism and the dictatorship
yeah.
of relativism, which rests also at the heart of Benson's book, The Lord of the World.
So, Matthew, just to try to pick the brain of Pope Francis here, it would appear that one of his greatest concerns is that there is this narrative being purported of us as a global society needing to move towards this one world, one global race utopia, which he knows is an impossibility. But one of the reasons why it ought not to be done is because it negates the very differences that brings about the flourishing of the dignity of the human person.
Well, that's right. Yeah. And it's that focus on dignity that we see in Dignitas Infinita. But this is also one of the reasons why Pope Francis has been sounding the alarm recently about AI. That's the subject of a lot of concern on the part of the Vatican, to the point where we have this agreement that quite a number of governments, institutions, and even corporations are signing onto about the potential threat of AI. But then we also have Pope Francis openly talking right now about the fertility crisis. He's going to be participating very soon in a gathering on that very issue. And last year, he, to everyone's surprise, and in some ways to the horror of the progressives, especially progressive Catholics, Pope Francis went to an event in Rome with the Italian Prime Minister, Giorgia Meloni, on the very topic of infertility and the declining birth rate. And all of that points to the variety of different causes for the drop of fertility, birth rates, especially in the West, but we're also seeing it in developed countries like Japan and South Korea. We're certainly seeing it in Western Europe. We're seeing Italy now looking at catastrophic numbers of decline, but even in the U.S., Canada, and elsewhere. So this is a concern by Pope Francis, and it all comes together in the broad term of what Pope John Paul II warned was the culture of death.
Right.
And we're seeing it play out.
You know, Matthew, in commenting on the culture of death, John Paul II did also caution the world against a societal ideology of overt efficiency, because in the name of that efficiency, one of the things that is bound to suffer is the family. And Pope Francis echoes this. He's about to speak, as you mentioned, at an event on Italy's demographic crisis, and his address will be the general state of the birth rate, and it's a conference on May the 10th. But he comments this at the 2023 conference. The birth of children, in fact, is the main indicator for measuring the hope of a people. So what he's ostensibly saying is by doing this, we're really bereft of hope as a global culture if we don't fix this.
That's right. And the numbers speak for themselves. I mean, Italy's population has been declining for quite some time. But we're now, I think it has one of the lowest birth rates in Europe. And now, of course, we're looking at the simple reality, as we are in a number of other countries, that there are more deaths than births. And typically, when you look at, to use a visual image that we are supposed to have, is that you should be looking at a pyramid of multi-generations.
Right.
Of one family leading to the births of happy children, the children themselves marry and have children, and they have children. And so it progresses. What we're seeing now in whole parts of Europe is that inverted pyramid.
That's
where
right.
Where you had a one-time healthy generation that is having fewer and fewer children, and it's reaching the point of colossal cultural infertility. And as a result of low population leading to depopulation, it's self-inherently destabilizing economically, politically. And when you look at parts of Northern Europe, for example, there are fewer people now contributing to the wider welfare state, for example, contributing to taxes and the overall common good. And that is leading also inevitably to massive cultural changes as replacement populations. I'm not saying there's an effort to replace them, but inevitably you will see the population changing. We're seeing that in England. We're seeing that in France and Germany and elsewhere,
right,
where quite logically you need to bring in more people to fill jobs and everything else. So we can't stress enough the significance long-term for stability, economic health, social health, and spiritual health with families that are simply not existent.
And that's perhaps one of the things that we take for granted, this whole push for having lesser children. I remember there was a point where Singapore had the two-child policy, and one of the axioms of the government was, if you have more, they will have less. So the whole push here was the preservation of material wealth. What we've forgotten is that without a sufficient amount of people to work the economy, the entire nation suffers, the common good suffers. But in the long run, we're also seeing the complete denigration of that very cultural basis that makes that society great. So if Italy doesn't pick up its numbers, the Italian culture as a nation will suffer.
That's right. And if we want to see the real-world disaster that can follow from that, just look at the People's Republic of China.
That's right.
That instituted a two-child policy, a draconian two-child policy.
Right. So I'm talking to...
With the results.
I'm talking to Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News and Senior Fellow at St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology. We will continue the conversation on the other side of the break. I'm Marcus Peter, filling in for Al Cresta on Cresta in the afternoon.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
Acton University is not your typical conference. Taking place from June 24th to 27th in beautiful Grand Rapids, Michigan, each day is packed with thought-provoking presentations on the intellectual and practical foundations of a free society. Bringing together world leaders in business, academia, and the church, Acton University is a conference dedicated to connecting moral and religious principles to economic and personal liberty. More information at university.acton.org.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
We have work to do. Our Lord didn't just rescue us from the world. He rescued us for the world. What does that mean? That when he rescued us, we're supposed to rescue others. That's a big message of the Rescue Project. Rescue people, rescue people. If you are rescued, then you are going to go about the business through your ministry, your fishing, so to speak, of fishing for men and women to rescue people. We don't want to just sit back and say, oh, this is great, I'm saved, I don't have anything to worry about. Don't we want to take some people with us? And aren't we supposed to be the Lord's hands and feet? Aren't we supposed to take care of the most vulnerable, to be perfect as our Heavenly Father is perfect, to help others recognize the importance of relationship with Christ, to witness? It's not just about us.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern. On EWTN Radio.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
John chapter 11, verses 21 to 26. This is the story of Lazarus. Lazarus has died. Lazarus is one of his best friends. Just before this passage, we hear the news that Martha and Mary send word to Jesus that the one you love is sick. And the next line in the scripture is, now because Jesus loved Martha and Mary and Lazarus, he stayed where he was. His friend's in need, he can heal, they've seen him heal before, and yet somehow because he loves him, he stays, and Lazarus dies. And then Jesus shows up 3 days later and is greeted by Martha and Mary, who confront him with the words, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would never have died. Rather applicable for many of us in our lives. We ask the Lord to do one thing because we're certain it is what we think is best, when in fact he has something which far surpasses what we ask for. The challenge is, in waiting for that to happen, we go through very trying times, which oftentimes makes us wonder, does he really care?
And good afternoon. Welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. I'm talking to Dr. Matthew Bunsen, a friend of the station and also Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. So, Matthew, we were talking earlier about how a declining population for any nation genuinely impacts the cultural heritage of the nation. And I'm not just talking about recipes and certain pieces of art. We're really talking about the cultural identity, the great heritages of, in this case, Europe and Western civilization, seeing denigration as a result.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. What we see, for example, in people who are looking at China, in communist China, was the wholesale massacre, frankly, of unborn, of discouraging couples from having more than one child or having only two children. They eventually shifted that to three children when they were projecting out what the demographics were going to look like. And as inconceivable as it is, no pun intended, it's as impossible to believe, they could be looking at severe fertility problems and replacement populations down the road, which, again, when you combine that with the cultural tendency for a preference for male children, we have an abundance of men and fewer women,
yeah.
And that itself only exacerbates and makes even faster the decline in birth rates and bringing with it then stability and culture. But it's also a loss of culture. It's a loss of especially the family. And what was really quite striking, and I know that you and I have talked about this in the past, is the stress traditionally in Asia, mm-hmm. in Asian culture, on the family, on respecting the generations.
So that's right.
You combine the declining fertility rate, birth rates, with this movement, especially in the West, toward what Pope Francis very vividly refers to as a throwaway culture. That means children who aren't wanted are simply disposed of. But then we also have the disposability of the older generation. This is a catastrophe for a culture, the loss of institutional memory, the loss of cultural memory, but also the loosening and tearing away of those generational bonds that have historically really helped to hold together
mm-hmm.
and to keep a society from fragmenting.
That's right. And what's darkly ironic about all this is happening as the result of a misplaced attempt to try to preserve, in this case, individual family identities. For example, when you're looking at China and even India, there was a heavy emphasis placed on having male children because male children continued the family name, continued the family tradition. Well, in the interest of that, because of abortion and like you mentioned, draconian measures, they're now facing this overt population crisis. And the very thing that they hope to stave off, they inadvertently cause for themselves.
Right. And you can see in places where family life is still very strong, there is a growing concern about the inroads of secularism and relativism and the very things that are creating so many problems and such a demographic winter as we're seeing in the West.
Right.
I think in particular, for example, you and I talked just a couple of weeks ago, I think, on Singapore,
mm-hmm.
which Cardinal William Goh, I had the opportunity to interview him during my recent visit to Singapore. And he talks exactly about that, about his real concerns about what he sees as the threats of the inroads of relativism and the impact that's going to have or is having on how they look at family life.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned him. So you wrote this article, and this is based on an interview you had with him, and it really speaks to the heart of the man. This is pivoting from some of the other conversations we've had, but even he understands that really the modus of the transmission of the faith has to be, first of all, in a deep encounter with Jesus Christ, but then that's facilitated in a culture that has allowed for such an encounter to continue to happen and be fostered.
Yeah, that's right. And it's also from his perspective, and this is one of the key takeaways, is that we need as a church, we need as Catholics to have that encounter with Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And that for me was one of the most compelling moments in this because he talks about that need to invite people to fall in love with Jesus because it is so transformative. At the same time, he's very concerned, as you can see, about all of these what he refers to as ideological struggles, gender ideology, same-sex, abortion, and euthanasia, and this technocratic society.
Yep.
And the loss, again, of family life and that multi-generational respect. That was one of the last questions that I asked him had to do with the importance of family, but also that beautiful relationship that has to exist. And Pope Francis has talked about this. This is why we have the International Grandparents Day that he established in 2021 in his letter to the elderly, that these bridges have to exist because there's that wisdom there, but there's also that relationship there.
Yep. And as you mentioned, these relationships are not just extemporaneous to the building of the culture. They, in fact, form the very threads that become the fabric of culture. This is what holds the moral identity. This is what holds the ethical virtue identity of the entire, first of all, family, then society, then culture at large.
Yeah, that's right. And if we consider that the family is, as Pope Pius XII always expressed it, the fundamental building block of society. That's one of the certainly very clear in church teaching, but it's also a logical thing.
Mm-hmm.
The redefinition of families is also having a massive impact on how society sees itself.
That's right.
It's why we have so many children who are now born out of wedlock. It's almost becoming the norm. And we have so many children who have no connection at all to one or more of their parents. They have no idea, perhaps, who their father is, and they have almost no connection at all to grandparents. Or we have, conversely, young people who are raised exclusively almost by their grandparents because their parents simply aren't part of their lives.
That's right.
And this unraveling again of family life, I think, is something that Pope Francis is very concerned about, and it's why he talks about it so much.
You know, this is reminiscent of even what Pope Leo XIII talked about in Rerum Novarum. I believe it was in paragraph 13 when he talks about, well, first of all, he's talking about the natural law responsibilities of the father, but then he also goes on to highlight the fact that the family is a true society, and he's really trying to get at the delineation between the authority of the government and the role of the family, and it's that the government should be at the service of the family. We've created systems, however, in the global sphere, especially with welfare states, wherein the government is taking over the responsibility of parenting, and that's destroying family fabrics.
Yes, and I think that when we kind of close the circle a little bit here with where we started our conversation today, and that's the Dignitas Infinita, where there is this very clear concern about all of these threats to human dignity. And one thing that you can see when you go through this list that's enumerated in this Vatican decree and this decree by the Didache Doctrine of Faith, all of the threats to the dignity of the human person are also very direct threats to the dignity and fulfillment and structure of the family.
Yep.
Everything from abortion. Obviously, the church has very clear teachings on contraception, on euthanasia, in which we are exterminating family members who are sick or who are suffering from disabilities or who are simply old and judged no longer of value. But then we also see the threats to family from what Pope Francis has always stressed, and that is the massive migrant crisis that is a global phenomenon. We're understandably very focused in the United States on things like the southern border. But from Pope Francis's perspective, at any given moment, hundreds of millions of men, women, and children are on the move. And families are being torn apart by international crises, by war, by famine, by economic crisis, and also by the pernicious and evil trade of human trafficking.
Right.
So all of these things are contributing to the loss of family life, the destabilizing of family life, to the long-term detriment, not just of those individual families, but civilization itself.
Right. And as you've been mentioning, really what defines the development of civilization is not technological advancement. It's not material gain. It's not the amount of wealth that's created and circulated. It is really the flourishing of the common good in a society at large. And when we miss that, we miss the forest for the trees, because a naturalist, empiricist society really does bring about the breakdown of its own framework.
That's right. And Pope Francis, I was reading his letter to parish priests.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bit of a moment of reconciliation, so to speak, because the organizers of the Synod on Synodality realized that parish priests were somewhat in short supply in the Synod on Synodality last October, and very, very few parish priests, priests with actual practical pastoral care as an experience, were invited to take part. In a similar way, we saw a very scant few deacons take part, permanent deacons in the Synod. And so Pope Francis brought together 300 priests from all over the world to meet with them and to meet in Rome so that they could be heard more fully as we go forward with this next step in planning for the October closing session for the Synod on Synodality. And in his letter, now, I would encourage everyone to go to the ncregister.com. Father Raymond D'Souza, as is always his great gift, talks about this letter in the meeting of priests. And one has to note that Pope Francis at times has had some pretty stern criticism of priests.
Yep.
And much as he has with seminarians. But this letter is really an outreach to them. But he talks to them in very loving ways, but he also mentions that they also have to remember that they are their fathers, but they're also sons and brothers. And he mentions that we cannot foster communion and participation in the communities entrusted to our care unless we live out those realities among ourselves. And in that sense, I think he's really reaching out that we are fostering in our priests and in our seminarians, people who understand the world and the threats to the dignity of the human person, but who are also fully formed themselves in a proper understanding of what community and family mean.
Right. And really the thrust of that meeting was that they would build amongst themselves and within their smaller communities of brother priests, a spirit of fraternity.
That's right. Yeah. And I think for Pope Francis, that was something that he wanted to articulate to them. He has been sharp at times with his priests across the church. And it comes at a time, too, when we're seeing parish priests especially really on the front lines of so many of these threats to family life. And it's where, too, I think some of the confusion from Fiducia Supplicans has complicated the task for priests in that now they have the added responsibility of having to make decisions about and things like that. And that's something that's just adding weight to what is already a very heavy burden for them.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not only the work of discernment. In their discernment, if they say no, there's often a backlash that they have to face at the very least on the parish level.
Right, and they're not very synodal, is it?
That's right. We've been talking to Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News, Senior Fellow at St. Paul's Center for Biblical Theology. Stay tuned as we round off this hour of today's program. I'm Marcus Peter for Cresta in the Afternoon.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I come from the other side of the tracks, see? My uncle used to have slot machines. Put one nickel in and it's emptied. Boom. And I brought him home in a bag, and my mother looked at me. Where did you get all that money? I said, I won them. You didn't win them. He fixed the machine. I didn't care if he fixed the machine or not, you know?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
Most experts don't think like you do. Go to the computer. Type in child, self-esteem, search. Last time I looked, 31 million options. The experts believe self-esteem is the preeminent moral virtue. Type in child, humility, search. Crickets. Why? When was the last time you heard a secular expert talk about humility? But that's at the very core of the virtues we want to teach our children. Always remember one thing. When an expert tells you how to raise your child, you have to ask a question. Is this expert of the same worldview that I am? Does he or she value the same virtues I want to impart to my children?
Do you have a teenager at home who's full of potential? Too often the world is telling you to be content with mediocrity instead of raising respectful and responsible young adults with strong character. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. If you need some help, not only to navigate those teen years, but to really enjoy them, check out my book, Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens, as well as my other books, on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Crescent in the Afternoon, rounding off this hour of today's program. Every family has to be traced back to its origins. It's what gives the family its original identity. We can trace our family back, first of all, to the apostles whom Jesus Christ sent forth, and therefore to Jesus Christ himself. And if we follow salvation history, we can trace it back all the way to Adam and to the Father. It is from the apostles that we have received the gift of entry into God's covenantal family. So we receive this gift. We are baptized and inducted into the family precisely so that you and I can induct other people into the joy of being children of the Father. God wants everyone to enter into the embrace of his eternal family in heaven. And so our job is to keep proclaiming this gospel to the ends of the earth. Until next time, I'm Marcus Peter for Cresta in the Afternoon.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.